Good morning, everyone. My name is Rachel Atwell. I'm a graduate student at NC State under the primary advisement of Chris Reberg Horton. And today I'm excited to talk to you about a project that we're working on, looking at using different winter pea genotypes for grain, forage, and cover crop potential in the Southeast. Why look at winter pea from a grain and forage standpoint in the Southeast? I'll use North Carolina for example. We're number two in U.S. swine production, we're number three in U.S. broiler production, and we're way down the line in U.S. grain production. So we're importing a lot of grain from the Midwest, and this is expensive for our livestock producers. We import a lot of soybean meal as a protein source in our livestock feed rations, and winter pea is an alternative protein source that can supplement soybean meal in our feed rations, and because it's produced over the winter in North Carolina, it doesn't compete directly with soybean acreage in our state. Winter pea also has desirable attributes for use as a cover crop in the Southeast, and the majority of winter pea breeding efforts have occurred in the Pacific Northwest United States, so the genetics have really not been maximized for the Southeast region for disease resistance, biomass production, or flowering timing, just to name a few examples. There has not been a regional screen of available winter pea genotypes for our region, so our objective was to screen winter pea genotypes in the Southeast USA for use as grain, forage, and cover crop end uses. We started these studies in 2014, and we're doing the screen at four sites, three in North Carolina and one at the USDA Beltsville Station. In the interest of time, today I'll focus on our research that we've done in North Carolina. We have two distinct trials. The first is looking at winter pea for grain cropping potential, and the second is looking at winter pea for forage and cover cropping potential. For both trials, we targeted planting from mid-September through mid-October at the latest, and we screened 19 winter pea genotypes. 18 of these were obtained from the winter pea breeder. She's a USDA breeder in Pullman, Washington, and she identified these as potentially successful in other U.S. regions. The other genotype we screened is the generic Austrian winter pea that's currently available to our growers in North Carolina. We screen these genotypes in monoculture and in mixture with small grains for both trials. And there's a couple different reasons we screen them in mixture with small grains. First, from a feed and forage standpoint, it can enhance the nutritive quality of the mixture for the pea to be mixed with a small grain. And also in the Southeast, we have problems with a disease called sclerotinia, which can be intensified by wet conditions. So we were curious if by providing stability through the small grain for the pea to climb up, if it might get it off the ground and less susceptible to sclerotinia. I'll first focus on our trial looking at the grain cropping potential of winter pea. Again, we screen the winter pea genotypes in monoculture, and we also screen them in mixture with three different wheat maturities. And the idea here is we're attempting a simultaneous grain harvest of the winter pea and the wheat. So we hypothesize all these winter pea genotypes would be flowering at different times, and they may align better with an early maturity wheat planted in North Carolina or a late maturity wheat planted in North Carolina. We took visual ratings for emergence, cold tolerance, disease pressure, and maturity. And we got grain yield using our small plot combine for the monoculture plots, and we simultaneously harvest the wheat and the peas with our combine. All the data was analyzed in PROC mixed, and we have six environments of our grain yield data from North Carolina. In the interest of time, I'm just going to highlight some of our major findings from our grain trial. First, of the 19 pea genotypes that we screened, 18 of them survived the North Carolina winter well. Unfortunately, the one genotype that did not was the earliest flowering genotype, which is a trait that we're interested in. From a disease pressure standpoint, winter pea genotype, but not growth in monoculture or mixture, ended up affecting disease in our trials. From a maturity standpoint, in both years, we felt like all wheat maturities that we planted reached grain maturity prior to any winter pea genotype, so the timing may be less of an issue than we originally hypothesized. Although we will note that some of these P genotypes have an indeterminate growth habit, and we're still wrapping our heads around ideal timing for grain harvest on some of these genotypes. For winter P grain yield, P genotype but not growth in monoculture or mixture affected P grain yield, and our highest biomass producer, our highest grain producers were 400 to 800 kgs per hectare of grain, which is very low compared to other U.S. regions where they can get 2,000 to 4,000 kgs per hectare of grain from the winter peas. Winter pea genotype did not affect wheat grain yield, and the average wheat yield here was 1,100 to 1,400 kgs per hectare, which is about 20 bushels to the acre, which isn't very good even combined with that 400 to 800 kgs per hectare of winter pea from a grain perspective. To move on to our trial where we are evaluating winter pea as a forage and cover crop, again, we screened these genotypes in monoculture. We also included a crimson clover and hairy vetch variety that we know have good production in North Carolina and the Southeast for comparison purposes. In this trial, we screened these genotypes in mixture with barley, oats, and wheat to try to widen the window of ideal forage harvest timing based on the small grain phenology. We had four harvest timings for our monoculture plots, and in the data I'm about to present, we'll focus on the first three harvest timings because our site, which had heavy sclerotinia pressure, by the fourth harvest timing, almost all our pea genotypes were wiped out by sclerotinia. For our mixture plots, we had three harvest timings, and this was as the small grain hit soft dough stage. So first for barley, followed by oats, then for wheat. And for all these plots, we collected biomass, and we ran these samples through an NIR analysis, which has been completed for the monoculture plots, but we still need to run our mixture plots through the NIR analysis. And we analyzed this data in PROC mixed, and all the data I'm about to present is averaged over two environments. To orient you to this graph, legume harvest timing is on the x-axis, and N content is on the y-axis as a function of biomass production and percent nitrogen. So the first, I don't know if this mouse is working, but the first bar all the way to your left is hairy vetch at timing one, crimson clover at timing two is the next bar, and then the third bar is the range of winter pea genotypes at harvest timing one, and then so on for the second harvest and the third harvest. So what I'd first like to highlight is we have a wide range in nitrogen content from the winter pea genotypes we screened, which is likely attributed. We had some pretty low biomass producing pea genotypes that have a dwarf habit, and you can see some of the higher end content winter pea genotypes compete well with hairy vetch and crimson clover across the harvest timing. This graph has a similar setup, but here we're looking at percent lignin content, which from a forage quality standpoint, a lower lignin content enhances digestibility in the animal. And depending on what your objective of using the cover crop is, you may be looking for a higher or lower lignin content. Again, here we have a range of our winter pea genotypes for this characteristic, and hairy vetch and crimson clover tend to be on the higher end of lignin content compared to some of our winter pea genotypes. To move on to our mixture biomass production, for our mixture plots, due to limited resources, we identified visually the five highest biomass producing winter pea genotypes across our environments and the environments in Beltsville and just sampled from those and the crimson clover and hairy vetch. So on the x-axis, we've got legume genotype. On the y-axis, total biomass of the mixture. The green portion of these bars represents legume biomass production in the mixture, and the brown portion of the bar is small grain biomass production in the mixture. We see pretty similar levels of overall biomass in the mixture across these legumes, but what I do want to highlight is with the hairy vetch bar, second to your left, legume biomass totally dominated in that mixture, and it was very competitive and outcompeted our small grain. So if you're really targeting a mixture of a small grain and a legume from a forage standpoint or a cover crop standpoint, you may want to avoid at least the hairy vetch variety that we used in this trial and look at winter pea or crimson clover. So what are some conclusions? We're not ready to recommend grain cropping winter pea in North Carolina yet, but there's potentially some room for a genetic improvement if we could get the cold tolerance we need into the early flowering varieties, because we hypothesize that's what's limiting winter pea grain yield in North Carolina, is that it's very hot when some of these pea genotypes are flowering, which is potentially causing flower abortion. So if we could get cold tolerance into our early flowering pea genotypes, we could potentially enhance grain yield. From a forage and cover crop standpoint, we're excited about some of the genotypes we're screening. I didn't highlight this during the presentation, but several of the genotypes we're screening are exceeding biomass production and nitrogen content beyond the variety currently available in North Carolina. So there's definitely some opportunities for future work. We've already discussed the early flowering, and there's definitely work that can be done on disease resistance in some of these pea genotypes for use in North Carolina. We saw a lot of powdery mildew pressure. We saw a fair amount of ascochyta blight. And at our site, which has heavy sclerotinia pressure, when it came on, it wiped out all the pea genotypes in this trials that we were screening for grain and forage and cover crop potential. Thank you for listening to the presentation, and I'd love to try to answer any questions. The question was, is there an interest for breeding for organic conditions while we were doing this work? So we're working directly with the winter pea breeder in Washington State on this project, and some of the traits that we're looking at are focused more for organic conditions, and some of them are focused on conventional conditions as well, extendable across both growing practices. The question was, do I know what the relationship between lignin content and what was the other characteristic?
And nitrogen content. Is there a trade-off?
I haven't analyzed those correlations yet. I'm sure there is some relationship, but we haven't got to that point yet. And I will note that for the NIR analysis that we're running our winter peas through right now, it's using a standard winter legume curve. But as a part of this project, we are also going to run a subset of our samples through wet chemistry to try to develop a winter pea specific NIR analysis curve. And then at that point, when we back correct our data to that curve, it would be a great point to look at, you know, these types of correlations.